Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I believe that teachers are a critical component in terms of helping students find their creative voice and reach their creative potential. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. And I've often talked about this idea of Genius Hour. I've shared some strategies for making Genius Hour happen with your students. I've also shared how Genius Hour is something I'm a huge fan of as a form of professional development as well. And so I wanna share this idea of how we could treat each Genius Hour project as an experiment, both from the perspective of the teacher and from the perspective of the student. So here we go. And I'm gonna start out by sharing kind of a personal story. Last year, I began creating stickers and sweatshirts and t-shirts with my own sketches on them. I figured it would be fun to give some teacher t-shirts and stickers away when I do keynotes and workshops, and I've been doing a lot more of those in the last few years. And so I thought, hey, that'd be kind of a fun thing when I, you know, conduct professional development. But it honestly wasn't about, you know, conducting PD. It was truly about that magical moment that happens when you sketch something out by hand and it eventually ends up on a physical item. I don't know how to describe it, but there's this total sense of joy that I feel when a package arrives and it has, you know, a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or a sticker inside of it, and it's something that I drew. It feels magical. And I wear my black hoodie with the white greyhound sketch on it all the time because, well, it brings me joy and I love our greyhound. I also have started wearing this one with our Great Dane that I sketched out as well. And it's the same kind of thing. I love having something that represents to my core who I am. And I just love being a dog owner. If you look at my notebook or my water bottle, you'll see a few of my stickers. In some cases, they are downright silly. I have, for example, the NASA logo, and I replaced the N in NASA with an I, and there's a Death Star behind it, so it stands for Imperial rather than National. Nobody gets it. It's a total inside joke that maybe certain nerds would like, although probably not. I didn't even do a very good job sketching the Death Star, but it's still there because it's who I am, and I love having it. And I've got this Be Wildly and Unabashedly Different sticker that I have and things like that. And you'll see it on my water bottle. You'll see it on the back of my computer. And so I really began to have these things just because I love having them. Now, a month later, I decided to share these works with my readers, and a few folks actually bought them. I hacked together a store inside my website, but really didn't do much with it. I told myself that I didn't want to alienate my audience by pushing merchandise, and I still don't. But the truth is, it wasn't about the audience. It wasn't about people who listen to my podcast or read my books or any of that. It was truly fear. I was afraid that people wouldn't like what I had created. I thought that they would find the sketches to be kind of sloppy. Besides, I'm a professor and not an illustrator, right? I should stay in my lane. However, over the winter break, I was reminded of my former eighth grade teacher who said the words that changed my life forever. When you hide your voice, you rob the world of your creativity. And I thought about that and I realized, actually, this was true not just of presentations or of teaching or of things like that, but of things like goofy little sketches as well. So this year I decided to expand this little project and create an actual merchandise store. If you go to johnspencer.store, you'll be able to find all the different t-shirts and sweatshirts and stickers and whatnot. And it is so much fun to do. One of my favorite aspects of this has been co-creating designs with my middle son, Micah. Today, he sat in my office, and I showed him how to take an image from his Remarkable 2 tablet, which I love And no, I'm not getting paid by them. They're not a sponsor. I just love the Remarkable. Onto Photoshop, where he can then color it. Now, all week, we've been bouncing ideas back and forth. And the key concept is something I came to him and I said, hey, do you want to help make this? It's going to be an all-in-one Spirit Week t-shirt. So you'll have, you know, things like 80s Day and favorite sports team and this and that all wrapped up into one single t-shirt. And I think he has like 11 different Spirit Week themes, maybe 12. I'm not entirely sure. But the idea is that most Spirit Week stuff is on there. And he has spent hours in my office and I've had the chance to goof off with him and expose him to the Electric Light Orchestra. And he got me more into this artist, Fablu. Words can't describe the inherent joy in co-designing something with your own kid. It's just a blast. And in the end, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but that's part of the fun. And while you can find these education-related items, I have a whole section for dog lovers. Right now, it's mostly Greyhound stuff, but I'll be adding things with other breeds as well. In fact, I'll get into that in a second. There's another dog project I'm going to be doing. I also decided to embrace my love of visual puns by creating a collection called For Pun-Loving People Who Appreciate Cringy Dad Jokes. And just a warning, these are really cringy, corny dad jokes. But I have, for example, a carton of milk saying soy milk, and then the other milk says yo también. Right? It's stuff like that. I'll have a picture of the Reese's peanut butter cop or the graduated cylinder throwing his graduation hat, whatever that's called. I can't remember what it's called, in the air, but you get the idea. And this is a throwback to a tradition I had when I taught middle school. I used to sketch these visual puns on the back of my whiteboard, and it had no educational purpose. But it was a part of what I did to develop a culture of joy and humor in my classroom. So I'm adding these items to the store. And the thing with all of this is that I have no idea if any of this is going to sell. I have a hunch that the visual puns in particular probably won't. But they make me smile. And who knows, maybe they'll make someone else smile as well. The truth of the matter is that this project is really low pressure. The cost is low, just my time. And if it fails, there are no real consequences to it. It's not part of my job, it's not connecting to teaching. And so I'm treating it like an experiment. Now, the merchandise store is all part of something that I've been doing for a long time. It's a personal Genius Hour project. And you've probably heard me talk about this before, but if you're not familiar, Genius Hour or 20% time is the idea that educators have borrowed from Google. It actually originated from 3M back in the 50s, maybe 60s, where they would provide employees with 20% of their work time to work on personal passion projects, which I really like, PPP. In education, teachers adopted this idea, popularized by Google, with the idea that they would give their students 20% of their class time to learn whatever they want. The students choose the content while mastering the skills and hitting specific academic standards. So that's kind of the idea. What I love about it is that there's this big overlap between creativity and curiosity. Students should be chasing both at the same time. They might be facts that they're learning, new skills that they're mastering, and all of that's in that category of curiosity. But in addition, each student should create some kind of product that represents what they learned. It could be a video or podcast where they recap what they've learned along the way, or it could be something that they make, right? They might make a physical object like an Arduino-driven pinball machine. Although we tend to think of Genius Hour as something for students, like I said earlier, I think it's a really powerful way to engage in your own professional development. Now, you don't earn professional development or professional learning credits for it, and I kind of think that's a bit of a bummer, but I do think there's something that benefits your students when you engage in the Genius Hour project on your own. You might learn a new language or how to play a new instrument. You might do a Wonder Day project, whatever it may be. And I think it's important because it forces teachers to struggle with a new craft or concept, which then helps them understand resilience and grit at a deeper level. I can tell you, every time that I'm doing a Genius Hour project, like I have these paintings that I have in my office right now, and that was my Genius Hour project last winter and the winter before. And I just have this better understanding of resilience and grit and the challenge of, you know, persisting and continuing. It's also a chance for teachers to do creative work outside the normal domain of education, and then they can bring that into their teaching craft. So it might be stories that they can tell and share, but it might be something like, you know, you learn video production, which then helps you make better videos for your students, or helps them as they create their own videos. But you get the idea. Sometimes working on something outside of teaching is exactly what will benefit, you know, the creative work being done in your classroom. But the biggest thing is that it really helps us become more empathetic toward our students who are learning, new things. I experience the highs and lows of learning something new. And as I work with pre-service teachers, you know, that becomes really significant. I get to see it firsthand and then work with them and understand the challenges inherent in being a new teacher and learning all of these skills, you know, from scratch. Okay, so how do you actually go about doing a Personal Genius Hour project? Well, I think it really helps to treat it as experimental. And so I'm going to walk us through an experimental approach to Genius Hour and what it means for teachers who are doing this on their own and for students. So here we go. Step one is to set up Genius Hour rules. For teachers, you might have a list of rules or parameters that you set up on your own. For example, I have 7 different rules. One says that there's no time deadlines. I want to keep it loose. Number 2 is do something that stretches you. This is a safe space to take creative risks. Number 3 is it can't be about education. So whatever I work on cannot become, you know, anything that I'm using in my job, because then I have a tendency to take work into Genius Hour and treat it kind of like a study hall. Number 4 is work on what you love. This is not meant to be a grind. I'm a huge fan of just showing up and getting work done, but this is a chance to take a different approach where you basically say if you're not loving it, you don't have to do it. And number 5 is that failure is allowed. Many Genius Hour projects fail, and that's fine. I did this dog comic strip before, and I've tried it twice in Genius Hour, and both times it just didn't work. But that's okay. Number 6 is to present your journey at the end. My friend AJ has this failure report, and I love it. And it's a reminder of just what worked and what didn't work. And number 7 is nothing is stupid. There are no dumb creative works here because the process itself is the goal. There are no stupid questions. Nothing is too shallow, too nerdy, too off topic, whatever. And so nothing is stupid is rule number 7 that I have. Now for students, the rules may vary slightly. And this is where you negotiate those rules with the entire class. I found that my students needed the rule, this isn't meant to be, they didn't need the rule, this isn't meant to be a grind, but instead they actually needed the rule, get started and try, even if you're not feeling it today. Because they didn't have that same level of creative endurance that I have, right? And so, you know, let the students negotiate the rules collaboratively with you on what the Genius Hour rules are going to be. Step number 2 is after you set up those rules, create a brainstorm of ideas. And what teachers will often do in Genius Hour is they will have, you know, students select one Genius Hour that they're going to do all semester or all year. But I actually think it is really helpful for students, for them to brainstorm their ideas. And to not only do that, but to brainstorm their ideas collaboratively. Each student can share their ideas, they can go back and forth, they can meet in pairs and small groups, and it's okay if multiple students have the same things that they want to do. Here's where some parameters might become really important. You know, for example, no, you don't get to play video games during this time. That's just not how it works. So you might have to come up with some parameters with them and narrow down what is a genius hour idea and what is not a genius hour idea. And similarly, you as a teacher will probably want to create a brainstorm on your own if you're doing a genius hour. And what I love about this is that your initial brainstorm is just a list of ideas. You have no obligation to finish any of the projects. And I would say the same thing should be true of students. A genius hour, it's about the process. So I come up with a big list and then I expand my list as the year goes on. And unlike a lot of brainstorms where you narrow down the good ideas or you figure out what works best, this is just a brain dump of ideas. So for example, my list right now is I want to write a fiction book. I want to write, and this is the dog idea that I said I was going to share, The Great Gatsby, but with dogs. Now, nobody asked for it, and it probably won't sell, and that's okay. But when I heard at the beginning of this year that The Great Gatsby was going into public domain, I thought, you know what this book needs? Dogs. So instead of just adding dogs, I figured, let's turn the characters into dogs. What this means is that I'm going to be lightly editing the book to make each character a dog, and I'll be creating visuals for it. Now, who knows? If this book turns out well, I might start a series called Canine Classics, but I'm not holding my breath. I also want to create a dog comic strip. Can you tell that I like dogs? I've tried and failed several times, but I have a comic strip I want to create, and at some point I'm going to make it happen. My next idea is to launch the Grilled Cheese channel with my kids. On each episode, we will experiment a new way of creating the ultimate grilled cheese sandwich. So that's going to happen. Open a merchandise store. I've already done that. I'm having a blast with it. I'm going to continue doing that for a while. Create a creativity notebook on the idea of creative momentum each day and how to build that. I'm already starting on this project with my friend Matt Miller. He's this amazing graphic designer. And we are building it on this idea of what it means to build creative habits, but not just habits, actual momentum. A habit is just doing things because it's already been done before. Momentum is a combination of habit and learning, or growth. And it's the idea of gradually getting better as you build those habits. Step three, carve out time. Now, for yourself as a teacher, you might choose a specific evening as your genius hour, or you might choose to do genius hour during your spring break or summer break or winter break. If you're a classroom teacher, you might get the chance to do your genius hour in school with your students at the same time so you can model the process. You just have to check with your administrators to get them on board to see that you're not failing to teach at that moment, right? That you're not just taking time off from teaching. You're still going to answer kids' questions and walk around and help. But whatever your approach is, it's key to treat this time as an appointment. I always put genius hour time in my calendar and I treat it as if it were a really important meeting that I am supposed to go to. It also helps to use genius hour as sort of a personal reward project. So if I finish my work early for the day, I will often choose my genius hour project as like this personal reward that I do rather than cruising social media. The same thing happened on my prep periods when I was back in the classroom teaching middle school. So, you know, it becomes sort of this incentive to get the work done that you don't want to do, like checking emails, so that you can get to this fun project. Now, for students, there are a few different options here. First, you might do Genius Hour each day if you teach self-contained, so you're teaching all subjects, especially at the elementary level. You might have Genius Hour as like an hour a day. and probably not an hour a day, but half an hour a day or an hour every other day or whatever. Or you might choose a single day each week and allow for students to get into that deeper rhythm. So maybe you say genius hour is what we do the second half of the day on Thursday or something. Another option might be to take the last week of the semester and make that genius hour time. So a lot of times that's when teachers might be showing movies and things like that. And you say, we're going to use this time to do genius hour. I think it's really important that all students have access to this genius hour time, though, regardless of how they're doing academically. It's also critical that students understand that this isn't free time and it is not study hall. So you're going to have to provide some structures. It might be the publishing process, the design thinking process, the inquiry process. And I would actually say make your first, you know, genius hour project a week-long project or a two-day project, something short, and then move on and go longer after that. Because, again, they don't always have that... they don't always have the endurance when it comes to this. I love the idea, for example, of doing something like a Wonder Day project as an initial Genius Hour project. And you can find the Wonder Day project on my blog, spencerauthor.com, and you can check that out. Step four, treat each Genius Hour project as an experiment. As you're going through this, you'll notice that some projects work and some don't. It's perfectly acceptable to abandon projects or to jump from one unfinished project to the next. Now, this might feel undisciplined and haphazard, but it's part of the creative process. Walking away and allowing for an incubation period is sometimes exactly what you need in order to continue later on. As a teacher, I always had a really hard time with this. I wanted my students to stick with a project and just finish it. But I eventually realized that there's value not in the finished product, but in the process and the journey, and more importantly, in the deepest values that were in the learning that occurred along the way. I realized that that was what mattered most. I have a grid that I use with students to help them understand when a project fails, what they can do with that. And that becomes a great way for them to think about. Sometimes you're going to do mashups. Sometimes you're going to put it away for a while. Sometimes you're going to revise it and change it. But the goal then is just to treat Genius Hour as an experiment. If the experiment fails, it isn't actually a failed experiment. It's merely a null hypothesis. In other words, the value is in the way students gather data and analyze results and learn from the process. This whole process, I realize, sounds messy. But I actually think that that's what project people do. That's what creative thinkers do all the time. I love the book Messy by Tim Harford. And he talks about how some of the most prolific artists and engineers and entrepreneurs are actually people that jump from project to project to project. They are people who are constantly doing different projects. They have projects that are unfinished. They don't move through things systematically. And although the process is messy, it actually leads to deeper innovations, more chances to cross-pollinate between things, and ultimately, it makes them more creative, but more prolific. They end up doing more projects, not fewer projects. So I would say for yourself and for students, treat each project just as an experiment and see how it goes. So again, set up those rules, create that brainstorm. It's okay to be messy, right? Lots of different ideas. Carve out time and then experiment with your Genius Hour projects. Ultimately, it's really not about what students create, but what they learn and really the soft skills they develop as a result. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you like this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.